Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogopina Shri Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Tura Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Ganga Maya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve. Gauravani Pacharane. Nivasesa Sanyavadi Paspachyade Satarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Samsajitam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Yuta Kamapitam Cha Panchakalpa Chupaschaki Pasindaviya Vachapati Janam Pavanevio Vaishnavya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. August 1st, 2022, in Hillsborough, North Carolina, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 38, Text 11. Ya ikshitaham rachitopi. God, practice this yesterday. Ya ikshitaham rachitopi satsato. Swatejasap. Swate jasap astatamo bida brahma. Swamaya yatmam rachitais tadikshaya. Pranakshadhi sadaneshva biyate. Who?
Ikshita,
the witness, aham, false ego, rahitaha, devoid of, api, nevertheless, asatsato, of material products and causes, swatejasa, by his personal potency, apasta, having dispelled, tamaha, the darkness of ignorance, vidha, the idea of being separate, brahmaha, and bewilderment, swamayaya, by his material creative energy, atman, within himself, rachitai, by those who are produced the living entities, tadikshaya, by his glancing upon that maya, prana, by the vital airs, aksha, the senses, dibhi, and intelligence, sadaneshu, within the bodies of the living beings, abhiyate, his presence is surmised. Again, this is Akura's thoughts as he's on his way to Vrindavan. BBT translation, he is the witness of material cause and effect, yet he is always free from the false identification with them. By his internal potency, he dispels the darkness of separation and confusion. The individual souls in this world who are manifested here when he glances upon his material creative energy indirectly perceive him in the activities of their life airs, senses, and intelligence. BBT purport. It's a bit of a long purport. In this verse, Akura establishes the all-powerful position of the Supreme Lord whom he is about to see in Vrindavan. The false conception of separation from the Lord is described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, 11.2.37. Vayam dvitiya syad isha apetasya viparyayo smriti. Although all existence emanates from the absolute truth, Krishna, we imagine a second thing, this material world, to be entirely separate from the Lord's existence. With this mentality, we try to exploit that, quote, second thing for our sense gratification. Thus, the psychological underpinning of material life is the illusion that this world is somehow separate from God and therefore meant for our enjoyment. It is ironic that the impersonal philosophers, in their radical renunciation of the world, claim it to be utterly false and totally separate from the absolute. Unfortunately, this artificial attempt to divest the world of its divine nature, or in other words, its relation to God, does not lead people to utterly reject it, being the world, but rather to try to enjoy it. While it is true that this world is temporary and thus, in one sense, illusory, the mechanism of illusion is a spiritual potency of the Supreme Lord. So that's actually a very deep concept, that the ability to forget the Lord, the ability to see the world as separate from Him and therefore for our enjoyment, is also His energy. So the ability to think that we're not in His energy is also His energy. Realizing this, we should immediately desist from any attempt to exploit this world. Rather, we should recognize it as God's energy. We will actually give up our material desires only when we understand that this world belongs to God and is therefore not meant for our selfish gratification. The word abhyate here refers to a process of surmising the presence of the Lord through meditative introspection. This process is also described in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, 2.2.35, Bhagavan Sarvabhuteshu Lakshita Swatmana Hari Drishya Bhud Yabidir Drasta Lakshanar Anumapakai. The personality of Godhead Lord Shri Krishna is in every living being along with the individual soul, and this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Across states that the Lord is free of the egoistic pride afflicting ordinary embodied souls. Yet the Lord appears to be embodied like everyone else, and therefore someone might object to the statement that he is free from egoism. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti comments on this puzzle as follows. How can we distinguish between being free of false ego and being afflicted by it? If a living entity is situated in a body, argues the objector, he will encounter the unhappiness and confusion, because those were the two things that Krishna is said in this verse to be free from, that occur within it. Within the body. Just as a person living in a house, whether he be attached to it or not, cannot avoid experiencing the darkness, warmth, and cold that occur within it. This objection is answered as follows. By his internal potency, the Lord dispels the darkness of ignorance along with the separateness and bewilderment it produces. So there's two main points being made in this purport. And if I go to Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada is focusing on the second one. So what Prabhupada says here is, in the Brahma Samhita is, go back a little bit. Similarly, Krishna, the original Vishnu, by expanding his internal potency, created the inhabitants of Vrindavana. In the Brahma Samhita, it is confirmed that the paraphernalia and the abode of Krishna are expansions of his internal potency. The same internal potency Krishna exhibits in Goloka Vrindavan is exhibited in the earthly Vrindavana, where he enjoys himself with his parents and in the company of his friends, the cowherd boys and gopis. By the statement of Akura, it is clear that since Krishna is transcendental to the modes of material nature, the inhabitants of Vrindavana who are always engaged in loving service to the Lord are also transcendental. So Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book is focusing on the second point. And I'm just going to read the commentary of Sanatana Goswami. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary is referenced in the BBT purport. But these are all decently long, but I just want to look at Sanatana Goswami's because he's also focusing on this concept of the chit shakti and the internal potency. So he creates by his glance without ahankara. This distinguishes the Lord from the jivas. He destroys ignorance by his chit shakti. This distinguishes him from the jivan muktas. Jivan muktas do not have chit shakti. Prana refers to the life force or to the gross five elements and sense objects. Aksha refers to the senses. Dhi refers to the antakarana. The Lord is perceived by the jivas endowed with pranas, senses, and the antakarana, dibhi. Since the associates are not covered by maya, they only appear to have attachments, as does the Lord. By his will, tad ikshaya, using maya, which has no power on its own, he manifests these senses in these persons. This means that by his power they act as if attached. On their own they cannot perceive the truth. They depend on him alone. The appearance of being attached is actually not true, speaking about the residents of Vrindavan. Their loss of knowledge is caused by the Lord. Or, why do you want to see me herding cows? It is filled with the identity of ahankara. No, you are devoid of ahankara, since you are the cause of the universe of cause and effect. Devoid of the concept of I and mine. Well, this is quite interesting to say that Krishna is devoid of the concept of I and mine. Destroying ignorance by your chit shakti, you are realized by people in the house of Nanda and others who act as if attached. These people are accepted by you as your own, using their pranas, senses, minds. Without serving you, without perceiving you, the senses and minds would be useless. Is perceiving him rare? His rareness is described by three descriptive terms. Even in one's house, he is perceived by the jivas by searching for him, ikshaya. What to speak of seeing him in Nanda's house? The cause is his mercy, swamayaya. In order to attain him by his mercy, he manifests them with pranas, senses, and mind. Or by his glance, ikshaya, endowed with his mercy, swamayaya, he is attained without fear, abhi-ikkite, by those who are created using their pranas and senses. The person upon whom the Lord glances with mercy is understood to be spiritual and fixed in bhakti, as said by the Moksha Dharma. Or though the Lord is devoid of ahankara and though he destroys ignorance, by his great power he glances, ikshita, upon the subtle and gross or the low and the elevated souls. This shows his great mercy. The Lord is realized by these jivas who are completely controlled by maya when the jivas engage their pranas, senses, and mind. The activities of prana are bodily actions. The activities of the senses are various services, such as seeing the Lord. The activities of the mind are faith, etc. Sha-ikshitaham rachito pyasato swatejasapasta tamo pidabhama swamaya yagmam rachitaistadikshaya pranaksha dibi sadameshu abhiyate. Sorry. He is the witness of material cause and effect, yet he is always free from false identification with them. By his internal potency, he dispels the darkness of separation and confusion. The individual souls in this world who are manifested here when he glances upon his material creative energy indirectly perceive him in the activities of their life, air, senses, and intelligence. So the first point, which I'm not going to speak about much today, but it's well worth speaking about, is the concept that the world is separate from Krishna, and therefore worthy of enjoyment. There is some of you may be familiar with the academic David Haberman, he's a professor, but he's also initiated devotee in the Pushkin mode. And he wrote a book about Govardhan Hill and the worship of Govardhan Hill. And he has a huge section there about the concept of, can God appear in the world? And can the world be a manifestation of God? And how people criticize the worship of the deity and the worship of a hill and the worship of the stones of the hill as the grossest kind of ignorance because they see an absolute separation between God and the world. you know, God is over there and the world is over here. And that the vast majority of Western religious thought is focused on this idea that any seeing of the world as divine is some kind of very primitive thought. But of course, when you make this absolute separation between God and the world, then what happens is you try to enjoy the world separately from God. So this concept of making an absolute separation actually leads to materialism. And that was brought up in the BBT purport. So that is, it's a very fascinating and deep subject, and I considered speaking on that. But I felt that because Srila Prabhupada focused on the second point, the point of the internal energy in Krishna being free from ahankara, that I would put my attention on that, though the other is certainly worthy of a week's worth of classes. So Akura is saying that Krishna has no ahankara, which Sanatana Goswami is commenting that he has no sense of I and mine, and this seems very strange. How can we say God has no I and mine? What does that mean? And this relates to the fact that the jivas who realize Krishna, they also appear to have some attachment. You know, the jivas in Vrindavan, the pure devotees, they also appear to be working with some sort of attachment in the world. And then Akura also discusses how we can actually realize a life of freedom through our prana, through our manas, and through our prana, through our senses, and through our deep, through our meditation. So what does it mean that the Lord has no ahankara? I mean, what is ahankara? And looking at this, I thought, wow, you know, do I even understand what does this mean? When you say ahankara vimudha bhakarta hamiti manite, that I have this sense that I am the doer. Yes? I have the sense that I'm responsible for the results of my actions, which leads me to take pride in the results of my actions. Right? Somebody will say, oh, that's such a pretty garden. And I think, yes, I am the cause of the effect of the garden. I have pride in my accomplishment. I have done this. I have written this. I have created this. And you know, the beginning of material illusion, what's the very first thing that happens in the material world? First thing in the creation. The Lord does what? He glances. And that glance is?
Shambhu.
And it is also time. In spiritual reality, there's no past, present, and future. There's only the present. And what does past, present, and future do? It gives us the sense, I do something at this time, it causes this effect, and I am the doer. It's actually quite interesting. And when we're in material illusion, like myself, trying to understand that there isn't really any past, present, and future, and I'm really not the doer, and I'm really not the cause, is practically impossible. Conceptually, I can't really understand it. I can talk about it, but I can't really understand it. So I have a sense in conditioned life under the modes of nature that I own things, there are things that belong to me, and I am the doer, I am the actor, I am the mover, I am the cause, which then leads me to pride or it leads me to guilt, isn't it? You know, when I do something right, I take pride in it, and I advertise it, and I write it up in my CV, and I, you know, and when I do something wrong, then I'm filled with guilt and shame, and why did I do that wrong thing? And I feel like that. Ahankara vimudhatmakarta hamiti. And these things are actually what? Karana guna sangasya. It's the modes of material nature acting. But couldn't we say that Krishna could say that in reality? I mean, couldn't we say that Krishna could say, I am and everything is mine? But what in the world do we mean that Krishna doesn't have this ahankara of I and mine?
And again, you know, when I'm looking at this and I'm saying, I hardly understand how I have a hankara. How can I talk about how Krishna doesn't have a hankara? But thinking about the conversation, one of my favorite pastimes, Krishna's joking with Rukmini. And I like it because I like logic and argumentation. That's why I like that pastime. So Krishna presents all of these arguments to Rukmini. And at first she faints because she's afraid he's going to leave her. And then she counters his arguments. And one of his arguments is, I am penniless. I don't own anything. And no one can tell who I am. They're not sure. Am I a Vaishya? Am I a Kshatriya? I don't have any clear dynasty. I don't have any clear actions. Who am I? And I don't own anything. And Rukmini says to him, of course you don't own anything, because you are everything. How can you own what you are? It's what you are. And our ahankara, I-ness, is, as talked about today's verse with Veena, it's a kind of separateness. The co-concept that the world is separate from God. And I am separate from the world, and I am separate from God, and I am separate from you. And the world is here for my enjoyment, and you are here for my enjoyment, and my body is here for my enjoyment. That is ahankara. So Krishna doesn't have that. Krishna sees that everything is him, and everything is meant for love. Now, of course, in love, there is also some concept of separateness. Because in order to love, there has to be an I and a you. There has to be I to love you, and there has to be you to love me, and then there has to be the sense of love between us. And therefore it appears that there is some kind of ahankara between the devotees and the Lord. It looks like that. Because we put on it this kind of this separateness of maya, where the world is separate from God and therefore I can enjoy it. I am separate from God so I can go and do my own business without relation to him. And I'm separate from you so I can use you for my own purposes. And we think that that must be the only kind of separateness that there is. But we have this achincha beta beta tattva. If we actually realize that we are one, then we can't exploit anything. How can I exploit another jiva if we're one? How can I try to exploit God if we're one? How can I try to exploit the world if we're one? And yet I'm a separate individual who's one, but separate. And I'm eternally separate. It's not that I was at first one and then in illusion. I'm hearing a lot of classes lately, Prabhupada speaking about Bhagavad Gita 2.11. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future, so I never cease to be. I have a separate personality, a separate identity, a distinct personality eternally, but also as a oneness. A oneness of existence, a oneness of love, in which all sense of I and mine is gone. There isn't an I like that. I can't own you as mine. You know, Prabhupada talks about, you know, my house, my family, my car, my this. It becomes meaningless. And the pure devotees, they have this separate relationship of love within this scope of oneness by the grace of the Lord. And the very strong point made here by Akura, by Srila Prabhupada, by all of our acharyas, is that this ability to do this is not within the jiva on their own. Now this fact confuses some people, and they think that because this ability to have this knowledge of achincha beta beta tattva cannot come from the jiva by itself, that therefore this whole relationship of truth is something artificial to the jiva, or something external to the jiva. But that is not the case. our ability to function in this absolute truth, that there's no separateness and yet there's individuality, is our eternal position. But it can only be realized and acted upon by the grace of the Lord. Something like, everything in this room is in this room, but we can only see it when the light is turned on. It's here. And without the sun, there cannot be any light. So we are who we are, and we have this ability to function in the oneness and difference, but without the chit shakti of the Lord, without the swarup shakti of the Lord, we're not able to realize it or act in it. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's not that when you go out in the sun, that creates the trees. It allows you to see the trees that are already there. Does that make sense to everybody? You go out of the darkness into the light. You see what's there. And we do not have the power to manifest light on our own. All the artificial light we're manifesting is coming from the sun. So I don't have the power in my own as a jiva to come to this realization. Even the jivan muktas, even those who are liberated in this body, they cannot understand this on their own. How can we be totally one with the Lord, with material energy, with all other jivas, and yet have a separate identity, such that our relationship of love is entirely free of exploitation? That the I and mine with Krishna is not the I and mine of this world. That I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. There's several places where Prabhupada said, to possess nothing, you have to possess Krishna. But for us to understand what that means, I can't understand what that means with my mind under the spell of the modes of nature. I can talk about it, but I can't understand it. In order to understand it, there has to be revelation. And this is why Raghunath Das Goswami in the Manashiksha, after being freed from all the inartas, he prays to drink the glowing nectar, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur says means the rays of the Ladini Shakti enter his heart and reveal everything about his identity. So it must be revealed to us, and we cannot do that on our own power. We just cannot. But again, that doesn't mean it's not who we are. Well, if it's revealed to us and we can't do it on our own power, then what can we do? And there's many people who have realized this fact to some degree. And so therefore they say, well, you can't really do anything. Why engage in any spiritual process if you can't understand these things yourself? If it has to be revealed, just wait until it gets revealed. Just kind of go about your life and hope that it gets revealed. But here Akura is saying, no, you should use your prana, your senses, and your mind. Atashi Krishna Namadi Nabhaveda Brahmanriya Seva Mukehi Jivaya Swayameva Svarachi. We can't understand Krishna by our mind, by our senses, by our intelligence. But the irony is that if we use that in the service of the Lord becomes pleased with us and reveals to us. And it's something like, you know, the little child, they're trying to reach something that's very high up, and by their endeavor to reach it, the parent helps them. Or the student in school, you know, when I was teaching children in school, they'd come to me and they'd say, I don't know how to do this problem in my math book. And I'd say, what would I say, first of all? Did you try? Did you read the instructions? No. Sit back at your desk and read the instructions. Okay, I read the instructions, I still can't figure it out. Did you try to figure it out? Show me how you tried to figure it out. Isn't it? Yeah? Prabhupada would quote that, God helps those who help themselves. So why is it that we have to make an endeavor to do something that's impossible for us to do on our own? I mean, it seems kind of silly. And frankly, it can be discouraging.
That's the qualification.
That's the qualification. And it can be discouraging. I mean, I'll tell you, sometimes I feel discouraged. I'm like, gosh, I'm trying. And I think of bhakti as something material. Just like I studied really hard in school for a test and I passed the test. You know, and I think bhakti's like that. If I just work really hard at it. Right? You and I were talking about this. If I just, you know, get all of the rules exactly right. And you have people that are like that. Well, exactly, how do we follow this rule? And exactly how do we follow this rule? And exactly how do we follow this rule? And then I'll add another 500 rules to follow. Yes? You see people do this kind of thing? Because if I could just get everything right, then I could achieve it. So why are we using our working senses, these three categories, or our working senses, our knowledge acquiring senses, and our mind, our meditation, to show our sincerity? Why do you say to the student, first try to work it before I help you? Why? That's how they demonstrate that they actually want to understand. Because we've all had experience with people who come to us and say, can you help me with this? And we do our best to help them, and they don't take it. Yes, has everybody experienced this? And I've experienced people who come to me with the same problem for years. Ermil, I have this problem, please help me. Okay, well, here you go. This is five ways you can deal with it. 2 days later, Ermil, I have this problem. Please help me. Did you try any of the five ways that I gave you? No. I mean, just the other day, somebody, one of these people like this wrote to me, this and this is happening. What did I do? And I say, well, this particular thing that I told you to read has exactly the solution to your problem. Didn't I tell you that? Yes, you did. Did you ever read it? No, I didn't. I said, why don't you read it over? So this is why we are doing silent bhakti. This is why we are engaging our active senses, our knowledge acquiring senses, and our mind and our meditation in Krishna service. It's our way of practical demonstration. Otherwise, anybody can say, yeah, I want to love God. I want to realize the absolute truth. What does it mean? Right? Yeah, well, I don't want to be a doctor, and you just sit on your couch drinking beer watching the football game. You know, it doesn't mean anything. We're in this world because we're operatis, we're offenders. We've Bhagavad Mukti, we've turned away from Krishna. We've turned away from this achintya bheda bheda tattva, where there can be absolute love and oneness and separation simultaneously. And we need to apologize. We need to be penitent. I mean, another example is people who've hurt us. And they say, I'm sorry. And then a minute later they go, but it wasn't my fault. Right? We all have people who've done this to us. Oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. But actually, I'm the victim. Or whatever. So our engaging in sadhana is a way of saying, I'm really sorry that I tried to exploit your energy. I'm really sorry that I've tried to exploit other living entities. I'm sorry I've tried to exploit my own body and mind. I'm sorry I've tried to exploit you, Krishna. I'm sorry that I haven't seen everything as you and everything is connected with you. And I really want love. I really want real love. I really want reality. And that's what we demonstrate. And even if, you know, we struggle in our demonstration of that, if sometimes we space out in our japa or whatever, or sometimes we think about eating the pizza before it's offered, you know, even if we have our struggles, the fact that we're making that endeavor invokes the Lord's mercy. And that's what he says in Bhagavad Gita 2:64, one of my favorite verses. That if you try to use your mind to be free of attachment and aversion and you regulate your senses, I will give you prasadam. Which doesn't mean samosas. It means I will give you my mercy. I will help you. That Krishna will then send his shaktis to enliven us, and then we can actually understand what Akura is talking about. How to have I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine without any ahankara. So, thank you very much. If anyone has any comments or questions or chastisements, I feel very qualified to speak about these. Yes, probably.
I just had a thought reading the verse and putting it in the context of like the whole thing that's transpiring to this point is that Akura is going to see Krishna, and he's also seems that he's thinking that Krishna is also going to see him.
Mm.
And so when Krishna sees him, what does that mean? You know, he's talking about his own ikshita, like we were talking about yesterday. But then, what if, now he's saying that glance, Krishna is seeing me, tat ikshita. That's like, it's not just a visual thing.
That Krishna is seeing, the Kura is meditating on Krishna seeing things. I'm repeating this for them. That means like Krishna is empowering him with his shakti.
Yeah, that Krishna seeing me is in, that his glance is infused with this whole sort of shakti, chit shakti, and you know, which created the whole world, of which, you know. So, like,
wow.
And because that's his rasa with Krishna, you know, it's reverential, then it's like, imagine how inspiring that is, the thought that Krishna's going to see.
Well, that's what we mean when we say to have darshan. We really, when we're saying to take darshan, what we mean is that the Lord will see us and empower us with his potency. Sorry, can you get that? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.